Well, good afternoon. This is a nice conclusion or extension of what Jason is working on in Mateo. And the rest of us in the VisionIR and proximal field sensing community is that, you know, I was thinking about what I should speak about today. One of the things that was starting to emerge in the literature was this concept of a spectral transfer function, which is essentially what you've seen Mateo and Jason do, which is you take a spectral scan of soil, you use some sort of model to convert it to a soil property of interest. And what did we used to do? Well, we used to have these, and we still do, have databases of soils from all over the world, and especially in the U.S., where we have a lot of soil properties measured on a particular soil. And what we want to do is perhaps we have one soil property that we can measure very easily, such as clay content, and we want to relate it to a soil property that's not so easy to measure, like some function of the water retention curve. Okay, and those are peto transfer functions. And what I started just kind of philosophically thinking about is, are we doing better than peto transfer functions with our spectral data? And how useful is this? I mean, are we building a straw man with spectral transfer functions, and they're really not going to hold up like peto transfer functions? And I'll explain a little bit more what I mean by that. But so my first slide here just gives you just a visual. We have our peto transfer functions where we have soil properties that we've measured, and maybe soil properties that we're more interested in that are harder to measure, or maybe we want to just associate measurable soil properties to some sort of inference of how the soil is going to behave in some sort of physical phenomena. And then with the PDF, we also have our STF, our spectral transfer functions, and that's the VisionIR spectra that you've seen in the last couple of talks. And then you even have these SPTFs, which really get me confused when I'm reviewing papers and I think, oh my God, what have they done now? And it's this concept that, well, you just, the spectra is just like everything else that you collect in the lab now, and that's true. NRCS, just when they do their full PEDON property measurements, they now just scan the soil as well. And so why even separate them? The spectral data, put it in there, and you can use all of it with maybe diminishing returns, but that's another talk. I won't talk about SPTFs today. So the questions that I was thinking about is, okay, we have the spectral data, and we know that it's associated with soil properties, and there's some fundamental associations, and then just some secondary and even tertiary associations between what we can get from our spectral data and what, you know, it gets back to what a little bit of what John talked about. You know, we're making observations, and we're associating them with properties. And there are some assumptions and models behind that. So my first question was, how much more useful is a spectral transfer function versus a peto transfer function? And fundamentally, when we're thinking about making a soil measurement, would you rather dry and grind the soil and scan it with the light real quick, or do a pipette method? And I think that answer might be implicit. But the next question is, you know, even with peto transfer functions, if you go back and you look at all of the peto transfer function literature, there's always the caveat, this worked well, this worked kind of well, this worked horribly, but no matter how it works, there's this concern about regionality. And that, you know, that makes sense again. And so the question is, I just kind of wanted to take a little data, do some spectral and peto transfer functions, and see how regional they are. So I usually do when I'm starting to doubt something, I really stuck a test to it. So in Texas, so this is my example that I have today. In Texas, we have shrink swell soils, and the inferences that we're wanting to make is, how is the soil going to behave when it changes water content? And the way we measure that is the coefficient of linear extensibility, and some people measure it with concrete and backhoes, but because in Texas everything is bigger, right? Okay, so we have this coefficient of linear extensibility, and what we do is we take a soil clod, and we need to know how it's going to shrink and swell with change in water content. So in the lab, we take the clod, we measure the volume, at different water contents, and actually for coal, we measure it at fuel capacity and at oven dry. Okay, it's time consuming because you have to collect the clod. But the cool thing about this coefficient of linear extensibility is it's actually made on the soil fabric itself. So just I have this picture up so that you'll remember the coefficient of linear extensibility is about how the soil fabric is behaving. There's pores, there's connections, there's certainly the property of clay content and how fine the clay content is. So there's that issue, which we think VIS and IR could actually measure, and pedo transfer functions, but it's not measuring the fabric. All of our actual measurements of our soils are on dried ground samples. Okay, so why do we think this would work? Well, we have VIS and IR data. We know fundamentally that there are some absorption features associated with how the clay holds water. Okay, so we know there's these overtones and combinations of water on kaolinite, oolite, and smectite. So we can do two things. We can generally tell how much clay is in a soil. It saturates at about 40%. Our ability to distinguish clay content usually saturates around 40%. And also what we know is that different mineralogies and fine clay particles can be picked up by VIS and IR. And also we know that it does organic and inorganic carbon. And inorganic carbon actually in a lot of our vertisols affects its shrink swell potential because the inorganic carbon is essentially watering down the shrink swell clay size fraction. Okay, so what do we do with this? Well, we know, again, just so you know that it wasn't a complete harebrained idea, that we know that clay content and CEC can be measured with spectroscopy, but no one has ever really messed too much with coefficient linear extensibility other than just some, you know, categorical things. And so how did I want to answer these questions? You have a little background about what we're interested in. Is we just wanted to develop a spectral transfer function and a pedo transfer function for coal and compare that. And then also I wanted to, once we did this with like our Texas spectral library that Jason introduced, I wanted to take these functions that we created and stick them in a library that was far more encompassing. So we used the national NRCS national database. And I didn't do anything. I didn't spike anything. I said, okay, here's the Texas spectral library or in our characterization database. Let's make a spectral and a pedo transfer function and then apply it to this giant library of the whole United States to see, you know, how regional are these things? Because I guess the hypothesis behind this would be is if we're not overfitting and spectroscopy is really measuring something important and it's a fundamental measurement, then it should be translatable. So here's the same picture that Jason saw you. So I have two databases that I'm using in this little experiment, the Texas Spectral Library and the National NRCS Library. They're both scanned with different specs. David Brown scanned the National Library, and one of my previous graduate students scanned the Texas Spectral Library, but David trained us. So we have very similar methodologies. And anyway, so we also, in all of these libraries and databases, you know, they have full PEDON characterization. The Texas Spectral Library is about 1,200 samples, and the NRCS Library is about 2,000. So this just gives you an idea what I did. So I had to have a calibration set. So I took the Texas Spectral Library, and I looked and divided out a calibration. So 1,000 samples from the Texas Spectral Library were used for calibration. And when we did divide it out, we divided it out by PEDON, so there wasn't any real obvious lack of independence between our calibration and our validation. So whole cores were kept in the calibration versus the validation, and we didn't just randomly split everything up. And just to give you an idea, our coal values, clay content values, and CECs were about the same in all of the libraries. The NRCS library had a little higher average clay content or kaolinite exchange capacity. So it did. So this was just to give you an idea how the model was built. The Texas Spectral Library was very good at predicting clay content and cation exchange capacity for our validation set for the Texas Spectral Library. And the reason why I'm showing you this is that clay content and CEC were the two pieces of information that we used in our pedo transfer function. So ultimately, we're trying to estimate the coefficient of linear extensibility in our traditional pedo transfer function. We're going to use clay by itself because it's something easy to measure. We're going to use clay and cation exchange capacity because that gave us actually the best model. And then we're going to use the spectral information. And this is the result that you're seeing here. So now you're looking at measured coal values on the x-axis, predicted coal values on the y-axis. There's a one-to-one line on each of those, so you can kind of get a visual. And the pink dots represent a traditional pedo transfer function. The green represents the spectral model. And essentially, as you know, you could probably expect this, if you just use clay content to predict coefficient of linear extensibility, your predictability is decent. Okay, we have an RPD of about 1.6. If you use clay content and CEC, it's much better. Our RPD goes up to 1.9. You know, generally in the literature, you're always looking for that magical 2 number, so that helps you compare, you know, a model of decent predictability. We're doing pretty good. So right there in the middle is your typical pedo transfer function created for the state of Texas to predict the coefficient of linear extensibility. And then when we just use spectroscopy to the spectral signal to predict the coal value, it's not as good as clay plus CEC. But once again, everyone laughed when I said, would you rather do pipette versus scan? Who wants to do CEC, right? not that many. But fundamentally what's happening is the fine clay fraction is very good at predicting the coefficient of linear extensibility. And what the CEC does is it probably it's a proxy for mineralogy, and it lets you know how, you know, the mineralogy and the clay content are both factors in the coefficient of linear extensibility. So this is how well it worked. So, okay, it worked. Spectral model is probably just as good as clay and CEC, and it's a heck of a lot cheaper than going and taking CEC measurement. So what happens when we take these models and use them to predict coefficient linear extensibility for a data set that's national, being the United States? Well, the first thing that happens is if you use a Texas pedo transfer function using clay content to predict the coefficient of linear extensibility, you're going to way over predict the coefficient of linear extensibility. The reason why clay content alone is not helpful is we know from the literature that really it's the fine clays that drive coal, and those fine clays are a function of mineralogy. So that's, we're over predicting probably because we had a lot of soils that were smegtitic in Texas. In the middle, we have clay and CEC, and that pedo transfer function works pretty good. I think I'm kind of surprised that it worked that well. But again, what's happening is the information on cation exchange capacity is helping that prediction tremendously. And then how's the spectral library do? Well, it did a lot better than I thought. I thought I was going to get to do a big I told you so and say that when pedo transfer functions are based on fundamental information like clay and CEC, that they're more transferable. But the spectroscopy didn't do such a bad job. It certainly got more of a bias, well, less of a bias, but the root mean squared error is much bigger and the RPD is smaller, but it still works surprisingly well. And once again, it just depends on what resources you have and how accurately you need this piece of information on your soils to be predicted. So that's generally, that's about all I have to say. It was just a little experiment to see how robust spectroscopy was, and every now and then I have to do a gut check because we're investing a lot of time and resources in getting this VISN IR in the field off the ground, and every now and then I just have to make sure that we're going in the right direction and I have faith in it. But I do, and our spectral transfer function was robust compared to the pedo transfer function, especially when we started changing libraries. So that's it.